Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Ann Baldwin.
Well, you heard it. All right. That's right. All right. It's time for another edition of The Connection here on WTIC News Talk 1080. I'm Ann Baldwin, along with Lisa DeMattis-Lepore, President and CEO of The Connection. And, you know, whenever we have a meaningful guest, of which we have many, 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 we love to give them an opportunity to come back on, because as we all know, life can change in a matter of minutes, if not months and years. And one of our favorite guests has been Blaine McKay. And Blaine is back on the program. And Lisa, I know you and Blaine have got a lot to talk about, and we all have a lot to talk about. So Blaine, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Happy, 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 happy.
Yeah, well, not really. You know, I can't do that.
We're trying.
Mr. McKay, or Blaine McKay, was served a 10-year sentence, correct, for a crime that was committed. And you've really taken that and turned that into your life's work, helping others. So that's really the premise of this conversation, and I don't think it could come at a more appropriate time, you know, in our lives or in our country. So thank you for being here. And if you don't mind me asking, I know while you and Lisa were chatting before the show started, you've also been personally impacted by COVID.
Yep, on a couple of different times. You've all met my fiance, LaShonda.
Yes.
Was at the golf.
Lovely girl.
Yeah, mm-hmm. she came with me to the golf. The fundraiser we had, the golf tournament, and unfortunately, she lost her mother to COVID in July. Mm. Her mother was her mother was a nurse taking care of people with COVID when it first happened, and it got her. And
so
it's something, you know, something to just be up close and personal on and dealing with. It was so hopeful at times, and then at times you didn't know what was happening. And put it like this, I kind of feel like the doctors in the hospitals was trying to figure it out with a lot of people in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen so many different types of ways they try to combat this COVID. They use the antibodies, and they did a number of different things. And in the end of it all, she could have got better, but her body got tired. It had got to the point where the COVID had left her, but it had ravaged her lungs so much that she couldn't survive.
You know, for everybody, this has been one big mystery and one big experiment. And now with the vaccines and stage, you know, one
with
of the vaccines
the vaccine
and stage two.
And it's awesome. It's not awesome, but just talking with Lisa about the climate of the country, with the, you know, the political climate, the racial climate, the economics and everything else. And now they got the vaccine out here. I'm scared of the vaccine. I'm scared to take it. I don't know what to think. Mm-hmm. I really don't know what to think.
But how long will that take? You know, and I give you a lot of credit, Blaine, for saying that, because I feel the same way. And it's,
I mean, a conspiracy theory maybe has been built into my head over years and years and years and years and years. Not to trust this, not to trust that. I don't trust it. I don't know what to do. What am I supposed to do?
And Lisa, this is a man who's saying that after losing his, you know, his fiance's mother to the disease. So, and there is a lot of reluctance out there. Like I said in the beginning, we don't know what we don't know. But what are we going to be faced with? What quality of your life will we have if we don't do something? Do you think this is, I don't like what's going on right now in my life. I don't like the fact that you're not in here looking me in the eyeballs. I'm not liking the fact that Lisa's not sitting across from me. And that's not even to mention, you know, day-to-day life with families and loved ones and events and landmark moments. So talk a little bit about what you've been doing recently, Blaine. We've talked about this before, and you're giving back working with sober houses and trying to, this, I know, as a person myself in recovery, this has been a huge challenge, trying to stay sober in the midst of all the crap that surrounds us. And so what are you doing to help people stay on the right path?
You know, I've always had a real good relationship with the community as far as recovery is concerned, dealing with you guys and Prosperity House. Prosperity House signed me out of the halfway house when it was time for me to be released, and that's their sober house. And as a result of that, dealing with Mr. Barry Mr. Barry Diamond, going back mm-hmm. into the connections, teaching classes, financial literacy classes, and whatnot, I just just kind of been involved a lot. The opportunity was afforded to me to help manage one of the sober houses. It started with $100 a week. She paid me, the lady that the founder of Prosperity House was going to give me $100 a week just to screen some phone calls and maybe go to one or two of the house meetings and take notes. That turned into an opportunity where she wanted to sell it, and I had the money to sell it. Then it turned to an opportunity for me and her to start another house on our own. I was able to get my hands on a couple bucks, and we started the second Prosperity House, which is in Hamden, 367 Circular Avenue in Hamden. It's a house I got seven guys in the house. It's been up and running for like a year. I just renewed the lease for another 3 years. And we're looking into another house. As a matter of fact, there's another house in the works for Prosperity House. But I'm looking to do one of my own. I've learned enough. I'm a partner on this house in particular. Not saying that I'm Prosperity House, but on this property, me and her are 50-50, and I'm looking to do another house, possibly for women, because there's such a need for women out here.
Oh, absolutely.
There's so much going on, but it's a tricky one with dealing with women and transitional sober living. You got to be real careful.
You got to be careful with men and women when you're transitioning them. Well, I got to tell you, Blaine, something. Put down that broom idea. It sounds like that venture might not have worked, but you're heading in another venture that's working, and it sounds like you're following your passion at the same time. So to me, that's a blessing.
Blaine, you're so great about giving back to the general population. I mean, I think you're so powerful for you to give back and to realize that there's such a need for sober housing. There is such a huge need for sober housing for women. Yeah, it is a massive gap in our system.
It really, really is. And then I've been able to create a really good relationship with Continuum of Care, which is TAP, a Transitional Access Program. I attend those meetings on the first and third Wednesday of the month. As a matter of fact, there was somebody there from Connection that was in the meeting on yesterday. It's a good thing. And right now, TAP is able to scholarship beds in the Hamden area. Before, they only did New Haven. But right now, they got funds to be able to help out with guys in Hamden. And that's where we're looking to do my next project is here in Hamden. It's a really unique opportunity. It's really, really nice.
So, Blaine, for our listeners out there, talk a little bit. We've talked a lot about sober housing. And between you and Lisa, if you could kind of educate folks on, you know, someone, where are they at? What's the first step they take in maintaining their sobriety from drugs or alcohol? And the transition that happens, the continuum of care from maybe going to the emergency room to, you know, the different steps in sobriety that actually can end you in a sober house.
Mm-hmm. So continuum of care, they do a number of different things. Their thing is really to try to get people off the street. If they land... I got presented with a guy. He wound up being homeless, living in his car. He had nowhere to go, and when they see people that is just really have nowhere to go, they can allocate funds for them immediately. But a lot of times when people come off the streets like that, they're not clean, and they might wind up in a different situation than in the sober house that I have. But the continual care will actually pay for them a room or something just to get them off the street. And then there's other levels of what we're talking about, where people have treatment verification that they might have just left from the Roger Sherman House looking for a place or what have you. And we can afford them like that through TAP. I can also do Like if I know somebody's coming home, I can say, well, somebody's about to, you know, leave the sober, leave the halfway house. I'll go and present them, and they'll vote on it to see whether or not they can come into the house. So there's a couple of different levels. Sometimes it doesn't fall on whether or not somebody's staying clean or not. I mean, they're just trying to get people off the street for TAP.
Right. And Lisa, you talk about how important the individualized care is, because that was probably a tough question for Blaine to answer, because everybody is so different. Some people might need to go into a detox. Some people, you know, might need other services to wrap around them to get them to a certain point. And that's really what the connection is all about, is if you don't offer those services, you have the allies and the neighbors and the people in the community that can. So talk a little bit about how that is working so well in our communities here in Connecticut.
You know, it's really important to provide services for folks that are struggling with alcohol and addiction. We see it every day. This is what brought me to the connection, and I've said this before, is a lack of treatment back in the, back in the 80s, lack of treatment programs, especially for women, gender-specific program for men and women, why the two populations should not coexist in the same treatment program at the same time, because issues that both men and women are dealing with are very different, what causes them typically to use and get high, and why, you know, to drink and drug. But, you know, the work, you know, sicking someone, incarcerating someone isn't the end-all be-all, and nor is, you know, going to outpatient every day may not be what people need. What people need, aside from that, is a safe place to live. They need to feel respected. They need to build self-esteem. No one chooses to use drugs and alcohol. There's usually a precipitating event that causes people to turn to drugs and alcohol. And, you know, it's a serious problem. It's getting worse. It's not getting better. We see this by the number of wait lists that we have throughout the state of Connecticut. And thank God that Connecticut, you know, has as many treatment programs as it does. But truthfully, I am a big proponent of residential programming, because I feel that from the research that we've done and what I see is, you know, people need to, you know, bond with other people that are, you know, also struggling with drugs and alcohol. They need to be able to focus on their issues. They need to be able to then have a safe place to live and get supportive services wrapped around. Because addiction is a lifelong addiction doesn't go away. You're not cured like a ham. You know, it's like, you know, people think, well, you know, I'm cured now. No, you're not. It's an ongoing process. It's an ongoing, you know, work in progress. We all are work in progress. Every single person is one step away from making a bad decision and going off the rails. People can say their life is together and they're perfect. It's not true. And,
you
know, you need to get support. You need to surround yourself with people who support you, but you also need to, you know, build self-esteem. And everyone, you know, wants to be a good individual. No one is, you know, typically born bad. They're in situations that they didn't, you know, people didn't sign up to, you know, for example, to be in a household where there's alcohol and drugs and abuse and things going on. And with all the years I've been doing this work, you know, 40 years, I can't believe I'm really dating myself. I'm admitting that my age, but you know, 40 years working in the field, I've seen every walk of life. I've seen every economic class of people come in to the wealthiest of families, you know, bringing their child in that has addiction problems, to people that don't have, you know, didn't have, you know, privilege and didn't have, you know, things in their life. That are coming in with the same exact issues. There is no difference. And I think, you know what I'm talking about. You know,
the difference is how bad they want it, how bad they're willing to work towards making a difference. That's where the difference lies in, for me. I mean, like you said, you got people that have different economic statuses, education, all of that. But how bad do they want to get better?
Right.
And that's where it all ties in at.
Blaine, let me ask you this.
Now,
as someone who spent 10 years of incarceration. I'm pretty familiar with the correction system. My dad was a CEO for years, so he was on the other side of the bars, but probably should have been on the other side. But anyway, you know, you could have come out of there bitter as opposed to better. What do you think is it that kind of clicked in you to make you want to get involved and give back and get involved in sober housing and helping other individuals?
One of the things I did was I prioritized and I prayed on it. And I knew I had to work on my relationship. I don't know how people feel about God and all that stuff. I know I had to put him first. And then I had to make sure I'm straight after that. And then the next thing I saw was the eyes of all my children. How they going to be looking at me and how I'm going to be looking at them. And that right there, that was it right there. I said, I got to do something or I'm going to be doing nothing at all. And I've been blessed. I've been so blessed for me not to try to do the best I can. I'll be a waste of skin. What am I here for? You know, I mean, what are we really here for? What are we doing with our time? I mean, what are we doing? You know,
right? And we know that you're spending a lot of time. You're spending a lot of time homeschooling your daughter now, but let's also face it: the recidivism rate is also pretty high. Why do you think you have that attitude and others don't? What can other people do to look at things differently?
Well, for me, when my recidivism, I think my recidivism rate went down because I didn't have anybody enabling me when I was incarcerated, making it easy for me. A lot of guys, they go in and, you know, there's always somebody make sure they're straight with that, they're straight with this, straight with it. And they come out and they don't take it seriously and they go right back. But when you get a certain age, like me, for instance, and there's nobody out there to help you out and you need to take care of your family and yourself and whatnot, it's time to make a change. It scared the life out of me. Plus, I didn't want to grow old alone on top of all of that. So I'm 55 years old. I'll be 56 years old my next birthday. And I just don't have the time for it. Somebody younger might look at things a little differently, you know, certain educations and can afford people to, you know, I don't know, to create a something that's not really real if they're not willing to work at it. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of hard to explain, I guess. But for me, my motivation was myself and my children and my age. Nothing's promising nobody around here.
Okay, Lisa and I got to stop you about talking about this age thing because you're 56. You're 56?
I'm older than both of you guys.
No, no. Right, Lisa? So
I'm older than both of you.
Lisa just turned, what, 25 last week?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Hey.
If only.
We both just joined.
To be 25 again.
Right.
And know everything I know today. Wow.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, we both joined the...
I know one thing. Both of you guys look great. I know that much. Both of you guys look great. Period.
Well, thank you, Blaine. But we both joined the 60 Club this year, so we're both we're both in the same boat. Mm-hmm. But we work at it, right, Lisa? We're trying to work at it. That's all we can do. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just so great. It's so great.
No, it's a number. It's a number. You have to keep your mind. That's why I have my son at 42. I'm saying I have to keep. You know what? That is. It, you know, when you talk about your children, I have to say my son just turned 18. The love and heart of my life. He is everything to me, hands down. I see the world so much through his eyes. I do, you know, you're going to think, oh, it's a typical mother bragging, but he is a good human being. He doesn't, you know, he's very, you know, very tuned into what's happening in the world today. He's an only child. He has an amazing group of friends that are every ethnic race that there is. He calls them, they're his brothers. They support each other. You know, it's interesting to see, you know, my son said to me the other day, Mom, can you imagine what the kids of these kids, the younger kids that are, you know, homeschool and how hard that is and they're not socially interacting. Imagine the anxiety. Imagine the problems that they could potentially face when they get older because of the way that the world is and the way things are. And, you know, it's always interesting, right, Blaine, to see the world through mm-hmm. your child's eyes. Because in some ways they're not as they haven't experienced some of the hate and pain and things that you go through as an adult, really, to make you who you are, and the way that they see the world. Sometimes they simplify, you know, they can simplify stuff. They can simplify, and they see beauty in things that, you know, maybe that we've, you know, it's been hard for us to see. And so I think that, you know, it's a tough world to navigate, but people like you that are able to, you know, go through incarceration, come out, give back to society, change your life, you know, show people that, you know, why it's important to, you know, get your life together and to be grateful for certain things and to help individuals is really amazing to me. You know, that's why we love having you on the show, because you want to give back and you see the gaps in the system, right? You talk about sober housing and how important that is. And I know so many people that have gone through sober housing that have been able to, you know, change their lives and impact, the community and society. And I think that really says a lot about, you know, who you are. And I'm really grateful for, you know, the things that you're doing right now. I have to applaud you. I do.
In fact, I really appreciate that. Wow. you got me over here blushing over here. I'm turning purple.
No, but you're making the world a better place. This is my point, is that, you know, I hope folks listening understand that, you know, we need to stop criticizing our brothers and sisters and stop, you know, labeling people and stop, you know, oh, this person is this because they were incarcerated or this person. No, we're all right. We're all human beings. People are able to change and give back to the world. And what you're doing to me, I mean, you had two choices, right? You could have said, you know, screw it. And stay on a bad path, or you could change your life and change other people's lives and help them to prevent certain paths that maybe you walked on or things that you experienced. Not everybody in the world does that. People are selfish. Right. People don't do the things that you're doing. And that's why I'm grateful.
And I'm going to tell you, man, if somebody thinks I'm making some money off of doing this, if I got 5-10 of these things going on, maybe. But right now, if this thing takes care of these guys, then by the grace of God, I haven't missed the lease agreement payment or the cable, the light, the gas, all the bills have been paid. But if somebody thinks I'm walking away with a chunk of change at the end of it all, no.
Well, Lisa, if that doesn't say it all, I don't know what does. It's not for the money. It's for doing the right thing for the right people that need the help. And we also want to mention to our listeners, if you want more information on The Connection or any of their programs, we urge you to go to theconnectioninc.org. That's theconnectioninc.org. Lisa, it's been great talking with you again. Again, Blaine McKay, thank you for always being an inspiration to our both Lisa and myself and to our listeners. And thanks to all of you for tuning in to this edition of The Connection right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Once and another path.